Hey everyone, I'm Josh Olson. This is my YouTube channel, A Conversation With. Today's guest is an author. He's a public speaker. He helps businesses as far as training goes. He's also been featured on America's Got Talent, Penn and Teller Fool Us. He's performed on the Vegas Strip and he's performed around the world. Today I have a conversation with Jonathan Pritchard. Jonathan, how are you?
Hey man, doing really well. With an intro like that, I better be good.
So tell everybody about your title. You're a magician, you're a mentalist. What is a mentalist?
A mentalist is a type of performer that has specialized in mind reading tricks. Kind of like magicians specialize in doing tricks with objects and tigers and things. Mentalists are experts at information tricks, being able to architect an experience just based on words and in actions. It's a lot of fun, basically making people think that you can read minds, predict the future, influence people's decisions. So basically all the stuff that falls under applied psychology, that's the main fuel of how the whole show works.
Okay. So you graduated from college in 2006 with fine studio arts, you could say. Has this been like your path, or what made you take this path?
Well, I always knew that the mentalism side would be what I wanted to do since I was a teenager, basically. I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. I love doing this. And my parents were like, okay, that's nice, but also you're probably going to want a college degree just in case a opportunity comes up. A lot of times it doesn't even matter what your college degree is, just that you have one. So get a college degree, then you can go do whatever you want. So I went into college with that mindset of, well, I'm just here for the college experience. I wasn't going for a vocation or technical training. So ever since I was a kid, I loved drawing comic books. Okay. So I went in, I was like, all right, I want a degree in comic books. And like, yeah, we don't do that here. It's like, all right. So I took some drawing courses and tried ceramics. And then as grown up, kind of like as a magician doing card tricks and stuff, my hands have always been the most important part, right? Just like, I've got world-class hands. So then trying ceramics and drying out my hand, I was like, nope, I'm not going to do that. So what's the least rough thing that I could do for my hands? Oh yeah, painting. That's nice. So that's kind of what I specialized in, and painting people and portraits is something that I still do. But that has informed a lot of my path, because as a performer, I got to meet a whole bunch of other entertainers, and a lot of their advertising and marketing materials would be homemade. And I was like, did you guys go to school for this stuff? And like, no, I made it myself. Like, it looks like it. So please, please let me help you out. So I've had a branding company, so to speak, for quite a while, helping people build websites and posters and DVD cases back when those were a thing. Okay. That way all of their promotional material would all look the same, so that if you saw one piece and another piece later, you would know it was the same person, so that it was all coherent and unified.
So after college, you had a couple jobs. You worked for Disney, you worked for Universal Studios. What would you say your big break was? Because you worked for these companies just for a short period of time, but what was your big break after college?
I guess it, all of my success has come from meeting people and then 10 years later working together. So all of my success boils down to having really cool relationships with really cool people doing really weird stuff. So when I was in college, I met a whole bunch of people that affected the course of my life in a great way. And one of those people was a full-time performer. He was making a living as a magician, touring the country, doing a magic show at colleges all over the place. And I was like, this is awesome. His show is amazing. Oh, wait a minute. So you can do this. So it's one of those things where I hung back at the end of the autograph line, let everybody else go first. And then I was like, hey, I'm kind of a magician myself. I love doing the mentalism stuff. He's like, oh, that's great. So we hit it off and talked for a long time. And then like 6-8 years later, we're still in touch and I'm living in Orlando. Mm-hmm. He gets booked as a featured entertainer at Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios. Right. And since I was already there, he was like, wait a minute. If I have a tour manager that already lives in Orlando, when I'm there for 2 months, I won't have to pay for a hotel for 2 months. And that'll save me so much money. And he was like, I know Jonathan. Jonathan's in Orlando. So he asked me, he's like, hey, do you want to be my tour manager for this whole year? And we'll just hang out in Orlando for those 2 months and you'll be home. It's like, yeah, you got it. It wasn't good pay at all, but I made it part of the deal. I was like, listen, man, I'm going to ask you every single question I can think of. Nothing is off limits. I'm going to learn everything about how you do things. And he was like, yeah, sure. Sounds good. And that I guess would be my big break moment, because being on tour with him, I saw how he went to conferences and how he would behave in the booth to draw a crowd and then be like, you need me at your school. And here, more than 10 years later, mm-hmm. I'm still doing college shows myself. Like later this week, I'm doing my first in-person show in 13 months and it will be at a college.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it was really cool. And it all boils down to finding cool people and staying in touch. And then half a decade later, they go, hey, you want to work on this cool project? You're like, yep, sure do. So that's why, to me, kind of relationships are the most powerful resource for any kind of business or success.
Absolutely. So talk about the Johnny Van Zandt or Johnny Zen Vant character.
Yeah, the that was my stage name for quite a while. So it's Johnny Savant, kind of like Idiot Savant, but better. Okay. It was the thinking. And part of that was I wanted a buffer between the showbiz Jonathan and the boring at home Jonathan. Because when you're out on tour, you're just surrounded with people who are kind of paid to love you, right? Like your client is invested in talking you up and making sure you're a big deal, because when you show up, you want the audience to go, oh, this is somebody. We got a really cool entertainer coming in. Okay, that's neat. So then you do the show and then you've got an hour-long autograph line and everybody's going, oh my goodness, that was so amazing. That's wonderful. So for a week straight, you're just hearing nothing but you're the best, you're the best, you're the best. Then you come home and hey, take out the garbage. You got chores to do. And you're like, don't you know who I am? I'm Johnny Savant. So that was part of a strategy of helping build that buffer in, so that when I was on the road, I'm Johnny Savant. When I'm home, I'm Jonathan. And then depending on what name people know me by, I know if they're Johnny Savant, it's probably from the entertainment world. It's Jonathan Pritchard, it's from my personal world, and tried to keep those kind of separate. The angle to that worked really well in the college market. Uh-huh. However, as I was starting to think about, like, how are you spending your time? How are you helping people? That kind of a thing, because a lot of the applied psychology that works on stage also worked in my business and was helping companies and corporations as I was starting to explain the thinking behind how all this stuff works. Then I started getting brought in to teach sales teams how to be more effective, how to build rapport, how to build those relationships very quickly so that their prospective clients would trust them, that they weren't lying to their clients and that kind of a thing, right? Well, you would bring in a world traveling consultant for thousands of dollars faster than you would bring in Johnny Zavant, the magician guy. So that branding wasn't really in alignment with the kind of change in focus of how I was putting my skills to use. So Johnny Zavant still exists in the context of the college market.
Okay.
But as a corporate consultant, I'm Jonathan Pritchard. So that way I talk about my experience as Johnny Zavant as context to explain a lot of how the applied psychology works.
Let's kind of stay with the stage name. What was your inspiration for that stage name, or how did it come about?
Well, the magician that I was on tour with specialized in bizarre magic. Okay. And he would break a cinder block over his head with a sledgehammer. He would take a super, like, for reals.
Magic? Is that considered magic?
It's under the, like, bizarre umbrella, because okay, there's a brand of entertainment called geek, and it was kind of a sideshow circus stunt. So you would pay your 10 cents, then you'd go to the freak tent, and there were geeks there that would do really weird stuff, like eat glass, hammer nails up their nose, and those are all things that are real. Like, I learned how to hammer nails up my nose when I was 15 years old. I can eat fire. There's no trick to it in terms of you're being deceived. You're really doing those things. It's more of the trick of learning how to do it.
Okay.
So there is kind of a blurry line between what's real and then what's just tricks. So breaking a brick over your head, he would hammer nails up his nose. He would also eat fire. So that's why I was like, listen, man, I've been growing up doing this stuff. Like, how do you make a living doing this, right? So that was the flavor of his show. Like, another thing was he'd take a super tiny nail, like a very, very small finishing nail, and put it in his lower eyelid and push it over and pop it out his other eyelid. Then he'd put it back in, snort it, and then spit it out his mouth. Right. Like that was the show. Right. So when I was on tour with him, I looked very normal. He did not look very normal. He had a 24/7 brand, like he had spikes. His hair was always in spikes. So he just looked like a rock star. Right. Like everywhere we went, everybody was like, he's clearly the he's the rock star. And I guess that's his assistant or something. I don't know what that normal kid's doing there. Right. So then we would go to venues, and of course he rolls up and everybody goes, yep, you're the entertainer for tonight. You look exactly like what I would expect the entertainer would look like. And who are you? Jonathan. Okay. But then people would think that I wasn't with the show. So I would go out to the car to get something and come back, and they're like, sorry, this is for performers only. Oh, and wow. I was like, I'm with the show. And they're like, yeah, right. Nice try. Right? You're as bland gets. So part of being with the show was one night at Halloween Horror Nights. He was really into live streaming and recording everything, and very, very media savvy. So one thing we did was he cut my hair into a mohawk. Cause I was just like, you know, I'm tired of not looking like I'm part of the show. So he's like, we could give you a mohawk. I was like, let's do it. So he gave me a mohawk, and then he's got spiky Liberty Spike hair, and then I've got mohawk that's almost a foot tall, and everybody's like, yep, you two look like you're in the show together. That makes sense. So then I've got this shiny, this big old mohawk, and then they're like, hello, my name is Jonathan Pritchard. Like, yeah, that doesn't really go together. So I was like, I need a name that's like badass, that communicates this is kind of punk rock vibe, right? So I was thinking, well, mentalism and mind reading, it'd be like a punk rock mind reader. So Johnny Rotten, right, is a punk rocker. Like, okay, cool. So Johnny something. And then I was like, well, it'd be like an idiot savant. And then I was like, oh, but what if it's like savant, but with a Z? So it'd be like Zavant. And then I Googled it, and that didn't really exist. So it's super Googleable, because there was no competing anything. So I was like, all right, this is me. So I set up the URL and set up the website and just owned that name. So yeah, Johnny Zavant, that's how it came to be, was lots of drinking on the road and just talking about it over course of a couple of weeks, and then just landed on Johnny Zavant. Oh yeah, that sounds cool. Like, Jonathan Pritchard sounds like a factory worker that you'd yell at, like, Pritchard. And Johnny Zavant just was too cool, right? Just like, oh, Johnny Zavant, yeah, that sounds like a kick-ass performer name, so let's go with that. And it's stuck.
So you were on tour with this guy. Was he the one teaching you this kind of stuff, like hammering nails up your nose and stuff like that? Did you learn from him, or did you learn on your own?
No, like I learned how to juggle fire when I was 13 years old. And when I was 15, I learned how to hammer nails up my nose. That's a demonstration called the human blockhead. So when I was 15, I was already a human blockhead. And I grew up practicing magic tricks, and then specialized and just got more and more interested in the mind reading tricks. Mm-hmm. Even though I had the circus stunt kind of geek skills already, that's why when I saw his show, I was like, he's hammering nails up his nose. He's eating fire. He's, okay. He's doing all the things I know how to do, but it's the fact that he's making a living doing it that I don't know how to do. So it was a lot more about the business side of how to make a business out of what I was, like the skill set I already had. Mm-hmm. And he already had a lot of time under his belt as a public speaker, as a performer. And I'd already had a lot of time as a street performer. When I was a teenager, I would go do shows on the sidewalk. These are people that are walking, doing something else with their life. Yeah. But then here's the 16, 18 year old kid that's juggling knives. You're like, what's that all about? So stopping them in their tracks, and then people would kind of be watching from 30 feet away, be like, yeah, don't be shy, come on over, we're about to start a show. And they're like, a show on the sidewalk? What are you talking about? So I got really good at building an audience, a big crowd that has zero investment in staying there. They didn't buy a ticket. They're not $30 invested in making sure this goes well. They're late for a meeting. But you have to be so interesting, mm-hmm, to build that crowd and hold their attention for the 10, 15 minutes that it would take to entertain them. Then you go, well, that's my show, everybody. This is what I do for a living. So if you would, instead of clapping, you can fold your dollars and put them in this hat. So you pass the hat, and that's how I made party money. Well, turns out, decade later, I do that at trade shows for companies, because at a trade show, you've got people walking around, walking down the aisle, and then it's my job for my clients to stop them in their tracks, build a big audience, then entertain them while delivering my clients' marketing messages, mm-hmm, to pre-qualify their ideal opportunities, then hand those people off to the sales team. So it's just a big machine of get attention, build the crowd. Once it's big enough, entertain them in a way that they clearly understand what this company is all about, and then go, that's exactly what I was looking for. So now I'm pre-qualifying 3-4 times as many people, mm-hmm, in the same time frame as the sales team would of having one-off conversations. And oh yeah, I do that twice an hour, right? Oh, so wow. So those things that I was doing when I was 16 years old, 20 years later, is an awesome business for world-class companies. So these are all skills that I had from very early, but it was learning how to turn it into a business. That was the most valuable part of my relationships with performers and entertainers.
And you talk about street performing. Where did you, I know you were in, you've been in Vegas, you performed in Vegas, but were you doing street performing in Vegas? Like maybe before you got the shows in Vegas?
No, that was in the mountains of North Carolina. I grew up near Asheville.
Okay.
So Asheville, it was the big city. It was, I lived about 45 minutes east of Asheville growing up. So okay. In elementary school, I lived in a trailer, and like the trailer park was on a dirt road. Like, so when I say I grew up dirt poor, it's literally, I was dirt road poor living in a trailer, right? My dad is a factory worker. My mom's a secretary. So that's my background. So then 45 minutes west is Asheville, the big city. And now looking back, like it's not a big city. It's great. it's awesome. But it wouldn't be like where Chicago, where I've lived for almost a decade. So it was Asheville. I would go downtown to where there would be the most foot traffic, because most of North Carolina is drivable. You got to drive everywhere. You want to go anywhere, you got to drive there. So downtown would be where the most foot traffic is. And I mean, dude, that's marketing. You got to go where the people are.
True.
So what platform are your people at? Are they on Twitter? Are they on Facebook? Your ideal client prefers to be where other people like them are. So figure out where they are, then go hang out there. So yeah, I would go to downtown Asheville and set up shop and start juggling and start conversations with people. And the more specific you are about who it is you're talking to, the more likely they are to go, oh, he's talking to me. Okay, this he's not just talking, he's actually talking to me. Oh, okay, I'll answer back. Right. So there's so much about marketing built into the process of being a busker or a street performer, a street entertainer. So that was really where I got started. Then it was open mic nights as I was getting older, then going on tour gave me a lot of onstage experience as the opener for the magic show. So I would be doing my mind reading stuff as the opening act for the main event. And then that was how I built out my whole theater show and then launched my career. And then that's how I was doing the full stage act.
So staying in the performing, talk about like America's Got Talent. We'll talk about that first, then Penn and Teller. What made you do those shows, or what inspired you to do that?
Yeah, why wouldn't you? Right? Like there's a big belief that you're not good until you've been on TV. Mm-hmm. There's just something about being on television. Even like I'm now old enough to remember life before the internet. And I grew up in the library with the card catalog and the Dewey Decimal System and reading books that are real, right? So in that age, television was the medium where there were three channels and that was it, right? That was kind of the beginning days of cable and that kind of a thing. But really, you had the big three players, NBC, CBS, and whoever that other one was, right? It's been long enough ago that I don't even remember. So if you made it onto TV, you were set, right? Because you're like, oh, wow, the media gods have blessed this person as worthy of my fandom, right? But then with the internet, and how all entertainment has splintered into ultra specific niches. And now it's like, when was the last time you watched broadcast television? Probably in the doctor's office, maybe, right? So
that's true.
So traditional TV doesn't really exist as the stamp of approval that it used to, but it's still that belief of, well, have you been on TV yet? Oh, you haven't. So I guess you can't be really good. That's what they're thinking in the back of their head, mm-hmm. is, well, you would have been on TV if you were good. So then if you went out for America's Got Talent and America's Got Talent said, oh, yes, you are worth being on the show, that's shorthand for most people to go, oh, I guess he's actually good. So it's kind of a rite of passage as a performer to go out for national TV. And then if you do get on national TV, that's a really big trophy on the shelf and legitimizer as, oh, okay, he's got it, right? So that's kind of the motivation behind it is, well, you have to. If you want to be a performer with credentials, it's not like you go to master's school for mentalism. So you've got to find other ways to legitimize yourself and the clients you work with, the media you've been on. Oh, he's been on the news. He's been on national TV. Okay, he's toured internationally. Those are all the mental checkboxes that a prospective client has of, well, my uncle grew up doing magic tricks and I hated him and the tricks he did. So therefore I hate magic tricks, right? Like that would be their default setting of nobody likes a magician. They're goobers, right? Oh, but this guy, he's an internationally touring entertainer. Oh, that's much different, right? So it's just part of figuring out the right way to present what you do to the world.
So which show did you enjoy more, America's Got Talent or Penn and Teller?
I'm not going to kiss and tell, but I will say Penn and Teller absolutely 100% better, more respectful. It was a much better experience. It was awesome. Loved it. If I had to go through it again, absolutely Penn and Teller, hands down, in my sleep, I would tell you the exact same thing.
and that's in Vegas, right?
It is. Yep. They've been working at the Rio for quite a while. And little tidbit is that we both had the same mentor, James Randi. So James Randi helped Penn and Teller be who Penn and Teller are, is. I don't know how that plural singular fits, but yeah. So Randi was a huge part of my formative years. And I worked with Randi for about 13, 14 years in a capacity for his $1 million paranormal challenge. So we kind of had that in common. So we had crossed paths, and by we, I mean like Penn and Teller and me as kind of the gopher, the assistant who would just, you need some water, let me get you something, right? So I helped because Randi would host a science conference every year in Vegas. So I helped run that science conference for 14 years in a row. Oh, wow. And then Randi would be in Vegas and then I would just follow him around like a lost puppy. And then all the big time names in magic, Randi was just a giant in that world. So anybody who's anybody in the magic world would come to kind of pay their respects to Randi, which is how hanging out with Randi was how I got to meet all the big names and people I grew up idolizing. That's how I got to meet a lot of my childhood heroes.
So what made you, I know you're still performing, but what made you transition kind of into like coaching for small businesses?
A big part of that was from the college experience. I do the show and then I've got an autograph line afterwards. And sometimes the autograph line takes longer than the show did. Oh, wow. And I've got people that are just standing in line waiting their turn for 45 minutes. And then they ask their question or like, how did you get interested in this? Like, you seem so confident. I'm too shy. And I'm like, no, man, I am super shy. I am extraordinarily introverted. However, I've learned outgoing behaviors. So you don't need to be shy. You need to learn how to speak up for yourself and ask for what you want. Then you'll be a lot more likely to get it. So those kinds of conversations I would have with college students. Then 3-4 years into it, I start getting emails from people that had been at my show, that had been in the autograph line, that I had talked with for 5-10 minutes. And I start getting emails like, hey, I don't know if you remember me. You talked with me after a show in Dubuque, Iowa. It made all the difference in the world. Here's what I did afterwards, and here's why it's awesome. And I was like, oh man, this is heavier than I thought it was. Right? It's not just all fun and games. This actually is kind of helping people. And at that point, that's when I started to realize, like, I can kind of see why, because the same psychology, the same ideas that make the show work have been ideas that help make the business of being in show business work. So I was starting to realize that the exact same psychology on stage had already been helping me off stage go from that dirt poor kid to world traveling performer. And the show helps distract people for an hour. It's just fun. It's just having a good time. We're all laughing. And at the end of it, they go right back to their problems. So for that hour, they're not concerned with their issues. They can just forget about it for an hour, but then they're going right back to the issues, right? So that's when I started going, oh, okay, I can start to understand that this applies way beyond just the stage. Mm-hmm. So instead of just distracting people for an hour, I want to help people solve their issues at a root level permanently so that they can start to build a life that they could never dream of, right? Because that's one of the common things that I would hear is, man, I can't even imagine doing what you do for a living. They mean the mind reading, but also touring around, getting paid to travel, right? So I started to realize, okay, my experience is valuable because it's so unique. Not many people have the same mentors and friends and experience that I've had. Okay, I'm kind of morally obligated to share this as much as possible. So now it's more of, if I can teach a team to be better communicators, to be more trustworthy, to be more effective at solving their clients' issues. Now, if I spend a day or two with a company, teach their people how to be more effective, well, that helps the employees because now they're more effective, they get paid more. That helps the company because the company's more profitable. That helps the CEO, that helps every single manager at the company. That also helps every single one of their clients and customers, because they're getting better service at cheaper rates. So this is a super weird, like, four-dimensional win, 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 win. I win because I get paid. So it's five-dimension win, win, like, situation, right? That to me is a better way to spend my time than just the dancing monkey that entertains people and distracts them for an hour. So entertaining people is still a noble profession. Distracting people from their issues. Yeah. I mean, that's Netflix is why that's why it's so big, right? It just helps people forget for a little while.
Yeah.
However, for me, the more valuable way to spend my time is to help as many people learn how to help as many people as possible. So that's why I still do the entertainment. If somebody wants to book me, I'll still show up and do my monkey dance.
Absolutely.
It's just that my focus, I feel like it's a more fulfilling path to share these ideas and train people in the skills of implementing these ideas in their own context, because really it's all just the same human operating system. We've all got the same software running. I like to say it was beta tested in the caveman times and has never been updated. We're still running caveman software. And most people aren't even all that good at being a daily user of the human operating system. And to run with the computer analogy, it's kind of like if you know the root level programming language, you can hack the operating system to do things that look impossible to a daily user who doesn't even know what a keyboard shortcut is. So my job is to empower more people to get admin access to their own software to now be more effective and skillful at making use of their mindset, their motivation, all that kind of stuff.
And helping these people or inspiring people, that's kind of what keeps you motivated. I mean, money obviously keeps everybody motivated, but you know, the underlying motivation for you is helping these people or inspiring people.
It is. Like I genuinely believe that the free association of exchange of value for value is the most ethical way to build human relationships. The only other option is through violence and coercion and threats and manipulation, saying, well, I don't care what you think. I'm going to use this gun to take your money. Right? That's theft. That's no good, right? That's not how you build ethical relationships. Understanding that you have problems and I've got solutions and you value my solution more than your dollars. We now have, after voluntary exchange, we now both have more value afterwards than before the voluntary exchange, right? So even think of it in terms of a restaurant. I value what the food they're making more than I value my dollars, and they value my dollars more than the food that they're making. So to me, that food is worth more than these $5. To them, my $5 is worth more than the food that they're making. So when I exchange my $5 for their food, we now both have created more value in the world. So the exchange of value for value is magic. And like that's how more value is created in the world. That's where more wealth comes from, right? So teaching people more and more ethical ways to solve bigger and bigger problems creates more value in the world. So that's why, to me, business has the potential to be the most ethical form of relationship that you can build. Because if you create an offering to the market and the market doesn't want it, well, now your only other option is to threaten them with violence. You better take this or else, right? So voluntary relationships, double opt-in, consent-based relationships. That's what business is. That's what the free market is, right? So anything that's not that, to me, is fundamentally immoral. That's it. So helping people who genuinely do make the world a better place, right? Like entrepreneurs, tech entrepreneurs specifically, come up with these amazing pieces of software that save untold thousands of human hours of repetitive actions, right? So they're completely revolutionizing what you could accomplish in less time. But they're such nerds that they can't communicate in human terms why in the world I would care about this new thing. And like, I've got my systems. I already know how to do this. I don't care about that feature. I don't care that you love it. Like, this has zero to do with me. I don't understand it. So helping those tech entrepreneurs communicate the value of what it is they've just created is a really good way of helping the world be a better place, because that helps the tech entrepreneur, that helps their company succeed, because now they can hire more people. Okay, those employees can now feed a family because they're doing a good job at this company that the market can now understand why it's so valuable. That's all communication skills. That's all applied psychology. That's all relationship building. It's all human relationships. That's all it is.
Man, Jonathan, you're so interesting to talk to. I could talk to you all day, but I know you have lots of stuff to do. So I just have a couple more questions or fun questions, and then you can get out of here. What's all this have to do with Kung Fu?
All of it is Kung Fu. There's no difference between everything I've been talking about and what Kung Fu is. Kung Fu is a human technology to build personal integrity. And think about all the parts of your life that are disintegrated. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to compartmentalize this area. I'm going to try to keep this area separate, kind of like what I was doing with Johnny Zavant and trying to compartmentalize my life. Well, that led to some pretty big problems because I was trying to keep my life in distinct Tupperware containers. Like, this is over here and this is over here. They're never going to meet. It was very difficult, right? So a lot of my life was out of alignment. So bringing my life into proper alignment is the process of integrating my health, my physicality, my mentality, my energy, my finance, like every dimension of what it means to be human needs to be built on a solid foundation. And if you don't know how to manage your physical body in physical space, how in the world do you expect to manage more abstract levels of your person when you can't even manage the easiest layer? So Kung Fu is the human technology that has been honed over thousands of years of learning how to manage the physical dynamic of applied momentum and inertia, mass acceleration, all that kind of physics. Right? Because there are fundamental physics, universal principles that apply no matter where you go. Gravity, mass acceleration, all those kinds of universal equations apply no matter where you are in the universe. That's what makes them universal. Well, the human body pattern is pretty much the same with local variations. You might be taller, I might be bigger, but we've got bilateral symmetry. We got arms, legs, that kind of thing, right? So there are more effective and less effective strategies for aligning the human pattern with those universal principles, right? So most of the time, people can only understand that in a very abstract kind of way. Be like, yeah, I guess there's the right thing that ethics is universal, but you know, I don't really get it. It's just kind of old dudes in togas talking about philosophy. I don't get it, right? But then you try to say that in the ring and it's just some philosophy and some abstract reasoning, you're going to get punched in the face. And there's no time to navel gaze when you're getting punched in the face. You can't wish your way out of it. You can't hope that it's not going to happen. You can't think, okay, what am I going to do now? No, it's too late. That fist is coming at your face. So it teaches you to focus on what you can do, not why it's happening, not, oh, I wish this weren't happening. No, what are you going to do about it? And what are more effective strategies for managing these base layer dynamics? Once you learn how not to kick your own ass, then you learn how to manage these very dynamic interpersonal situations. Then you've got physical layer experience in what are better and better ways to navigate those situations. Because you realize leading with your face is a really bad strategy. Creating boundaries and being able to enforce those boundaries and navigate the dynamic of somebody trying to breach those boundaries. How do you flow through that process? You learn it in a literal physical way. Once you've got that under your belt, you'd now start to see, oh, that's also happening at an emotional level too. I have zero emotional boundaries. I let my emotions run the show, and I don't care how angry I get. The more angry I get, the more I get punched in the face. So maybe learning to manage my emotions would be a useful skill to have. Okay, so you learn to manage your emotions. Then you learn to manage your thinking. Then you learn to manage your kind of the most abstract is your energy, which is just a shorthand way of saying all of those levels at their most abstract way of being. You learn to manage it through managing base physical layer. So Kung Fu is the technology of developing effective strategies at managing all of those levels at a higher and higher level of skill.
Wow, that's super interesting. I just got one more question for you.
Yeah.
If you weren't doing what you're doing now, what's another profession that you would do or you've wanted to do?
Helicopter pilot. That was one of the only things that I was interested in as a kid that I haven't been doing, right? Because I've kept up with the painting. I still paint. I paint on an iPad, and then I create NFTs out of it. So I've been doing crypto painting for years already. So like in the past couple of months, and NFTs have gotten big. I was like, yeah, I've been doing that for 2 years already with a virtual reality art gallery that you could walk around and see my art. So I'm already doing that. I've been teaching Kung Fu for a couple of years. So I love doing that. Performer, consultant, author. Yeah, I'm doing everything that I've ever dreamt of doing except helicopter pilot. That would be the one thing that I haven't spent the time to build out. But yeah, that would be it.
Man, Jonathan, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. And you definitely did your homework. You did your research. That was super delightful. Thank you for putting in a lot of time on the front end.
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. Have a good rest of your day.
You got it. Thanks.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for watching. Did you enjoy this conversation? Let me know in the comments section below. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button below to be notified of all my conversations. See you again soon.